Call the answer line where you're the head honcho, the big cheese, top dog, big man, mighty boss. And you can tell us exactly where to go.
Hello, this is Jonathan Marks for PCJ Online. Just about to push the button on another program from the Media Network Vintage Radio Archives.
This is the Dutch International Service, Radio Netherlands. Media Network, the weekly communications magazine for shortwave listeners. Produced and presented by Jonathan Marks.
Hello, it's nice to be back in Holland after the battle to make the program last week from a hotel room in the middle of the French radio and television strike. A huge pile of mail specifically sent to me has built up in my absence. I estimate about 450 letters in all, so if you've written in, a plea for a little patience while we wade through. Let's start with some fun, though, and this coming Sunday, June the 1st, from 12 hours UTC onwards, our colleagues at the Dutch Domestic Radio Service, who produce the NOS Hobby Scope programme, will be sending thousands of people out on the roads for a radio chase. As the programme's producer Hans Janssen explained to me, they'll be launching a small balloon from a secret location.
There will be a weather balloon, and on this weather balloon there is a tiny transmitter. It's only 100 milliwatt, and it will do beep, beep, beep on a frequency of 145.375 megahertz. That is one in the ham bands, you know, in the 2 meter band. When it beeps, you have to search for it. You can do that with a scanner or a receiver and a directional antenna. When you find the weather balloon and transmitter, you won a prize.
The weather balloon carries a small explosive device on board which can be triggered from the ground. Around 3 hours after launch and around 12 kilometres directly above Holland, the balloon is burst and the transmitter returns to Earth thanks to a small parachute. When it's at that height, though, the transmitter on 145.375 megahertz can be heard in many parts of Europe, despite the low power. The final destination of the transmitter, that everyone hopes to find, is rather unpredictable.
Very often it ends up in the sea, or in Germany, or in Belgium. I don't know where it ends up. It's never sure.
But somebody usually finds it.
And the latest time was in 82.
Oh, so they don't find it every year?
No. It disappears very often.
How long have you been doing this?
Well, I think for 10 years now, and thousands of people are going to watch the balloon and to look for it.
Okay, and what happens if you manage to hear that beacon, even though you may not find the balloon? There is some other reward.
Yeah, you can write to us on Post Box 1200, and the postal code is 1200 BE in Hilversum, and then you get your special QSL card.
Now, you say that several thousand people take part from the general public, the listeners to Hobby Scope. Obviously, you need a team to know exactly where it's gone as well.
Yeah, we need a team of ham operators. There are two cars following the balloon. And then we have specialists from the Meteorological Institute in KNMI and also from the Air Force. The Air Force is incorporated very much here because they have special radar equipment and also there are meteorological points on the air bases where the balloon can be launched.
Hope there are no gales on Sunday. The event is being sponsored by both Dutch national amateur radio organisations, the VIRON and the VRZR. And Pete Myers, who's joining me now, also has a report with an amateur radio connection.
Well, Jonathan, according to Venit Dixit in New Delhi, a recent meeting in the Indian capital led to the formation of a working committee to set up the Indian Council of Radio Amateurs. This will be a new body designed to serve the interests of some 2,500 amateur radio operators in India and should be launched next month. The meeting was held under the auspices of the Indian Department of Electronics, which hopes that regional centres to promote amateur radio and shortwave listening in general can be set up around the country. A large Indian public sector company has been given a license to buy electronic equipment in Japan in bulk, and it's hoped that this will lead to the availability of cheaper transmitting and receiving equipment on the Indian market within 6 to 8 months.
To Africa now, and as from next Monday, a new private subscription television channel is opening in Johannesburg, South Africa, on Channel 39, testing for 2 hours daily, starting at 15 hours UTC. The programmes will be unscrambled for 2 months. In the Transkei, the 500-kilowatt medium-wave transmitter, used by commercial Capital Radio when it first came on the air back in 1980, is believed to have been sold to Transworld Radio, who are going to ship it to Bonaire in the Netherlands Antilles to replace a worn-out transmitter of the same power, currently on 800 kilohertz.
Delegates from 75 countries had a lively discussion in Dubrovnik, Yugoslavia, recently. And when the session broke up on May 21st, they failed to agree on a new world standard for high-definition television. The US, Canada and Japan are trying to get a system developed by NHK in Tokyo offering a picture of 1125 lines universally accepted. But several European nations, including the Netherlands, UK and West Germany, argue that the new standard will cause expensive conversion problems if it's integrated into 625 line systems currently used in Western Europe. European manufacturers have promised to come up with alternative solutions quite quickly, but for the moment, the Japanese system is the only world HDTV standard candidate.
It may be warm in Holland, but at the moment it's very hot in Spain, from where Trevor Brooke has just sent us this audio postcard.
Ever since offshore radio started in the 60s, there have always been rumours of new vessels which are being prepared to broadcast offshore. The latest series of stories have concerned a boat which was purchased in Southampton Docks in February, and which has allegedly been fitted out with two transmitters, a 50-kilowatt RCA amplifase, similar to used on Caroline for 963 service, and another lower power transmitter with conventional plate and screen modulation. This boat is alleged to be planning to broadcast to the UK from the Thames estuary on 576 and 801 kilohertz. So, Jonathan, how interesting to come to Santander, a port in Spain, and see a vessel which looks as though it could be being prepared for a radio ship. I'm standing on the balcony on the 8th floor of the Hotel Bahia, overlooking Santander Bay. Moored about 500 metres offshore, there's a rather interesting vessel. It's somewhere between the size of the Communicator, the radio lasers vessel, and the Ross Revenge, Caroline ship. And mounted in the centre of this boat, there's a telescopic mast. It's got four sections and each one is probably about 50 feet high. The whole thing isn't raised at the moment, and there's a gin pole at the top for hoisting up the sections. The structure's reminiscent of the kind of thing which was on the Mi Amigo, Caroline's previous vessel, which eventually sank in the Thames estuary after it was hauled on the sandbank. And these kind of structures can be fed with RF by dropping wires from the top of the mast to the base, and then a cage of wires, and these are all fed as a folded monopole structure. Now, this boat is painted grey in the upper part of the hull and dark red on the lower part, and unfortunately at this distance my binoculars cannot make out the name on the end of the ship. There are lights on board and there's a rope ladder hanging down at the back. And I can see somebody walking around on deck right at the front of the ship. But the ship swings with the tide. It's from its single anchor chain at the front, sometimes presenting one side, sometimes presenting the other side towards the shoreline. At the moment it's swinging between these two states, it's pointing end on with the bows towards me. Now, Jonathan, I've come to the quayside. It's quiet down here, just a few fishermen. But the sea mist has lifted now, and the name of the ship is now visible. It's called the Nanel, spelt N-A-N-N-E-L. E-double-L. The name has been painted on with fresh black paint. And on the stern of the ship, the registration town or country has been painted over, and there's no fresh country or location been added. The other interesting thing is that on the deck, in front of the mast, there's the back section of a long articulated lorry, and was obviously the means of getting the aerial structure to the ship. The whole thing has obviously been hoisted on board, and then the aerial has been raised vertically. The trailer, this low loader, is a British vehicle because it's got the long vehicle sign in yellow and red, which long vehicles in Britain have to carry. Well, I'm by the quayside, Jonathan, and I've just seen that the orange launch at the side of the Nenel has left the boat. It's just run along the shore to find out where it's coming to land. He's just coming up to the quayside. Hello, do you speak English? Hablo inglés.
Si.
You're from the Nenel?
That's right.
I'm reporting for Radio Netherlands. Can you tell me how you're getting on?
Not very well.
Not very well. Can you take me out there to have a chat?
Not without permission.
Who do you need permission from?
UK.
I see. Can you tell me what's been happening out there?
Virtually nothing.
You got any engineers working on things?
No.
Well, there's no one for England there.
Only the ship's engineers.
Yep. Is any of the transmitting equipment working?
No.
Any idea what the timescale's supposed to be?
I've got a slight idea. I wish I did.
Well, you were hoping to go back to the UK?
I am, yes. As soon as I can.
Uh-huh. Is there any studio equipment on board?
There's some on board, but none of it's working and none of it's being worked on.
Yeah.
We're not allowed to touch anything until we get clearance from the authorities.
Clearance from which authority?
These. Ministry of the Interior.
What's the plan with the ship? Do they hope to use it in the UK?
They hope to. Whether they will or not, I don't know.
Yeah. How long's it been here now?
Too long.
Too long. A month?
Longer.
I don't think he wants to say any more. He's just walked off. So I can't get permission to go on board without a permit from the UK by the owners of this ship. And this gentleman who's just come ashore to get some supplies apparently reports that almost nothing's happened on board. So, in the harbour we have a ship with a large mast, some studio equipment on board but it's not working, some transmitter equipment on board but it's not working, there's no electronic engineers there. There's a ship's engineer dealing with engines and generators, that's all apparently.
Except for a PS to Trevor Brooks' audio postcard, in which he says that the ship's chief engineer later told him that although orders come from Britain, the ship is now owned by an American group. And it would take at least 3 weeks to get the ship completely seaworthy once the Nenel gets the clearance from the Spanish authorities. Now let's welcome back our clandestine columnist, John Campbell. John.
It's good to be back again on Media Network after not being there last month, and personally it's good to have my voice back. I could only whisper or croak last month, very embarrassing, so I had to miss out on my usual contribution. I'm also changing my working address to London from a very quiet rural corner of England, and this has been a real education on the unofficial or pirate radio front. Of course, I've been aware for a long time that there are many pirate stations in and around London, but listening to them regularly at first hand is a real revelation. Most of the activity is on the FM band, though there are some stations towards the high-frequency end of the medium-wave band too. And the best times to listen are late Saturday nights until early Sunday mornings, and again during the late mornings and the afternoons on Sundays. Although there are always two or three stations that seem to be on the air continuously 7 days a week.
Well, let me slip in a story researched by Roger Tiley, based in London. As you may know, there's currently a rather long, drawn-out dispute between print workers and management at one of the printing plants owned by Australian media magnate Rupert Murdoch. While a dispute in that industry isn't new in Britain, a clandestine radio station as part of the action certainly is. What would you think if you came across this on the FM dial?
John Sullivan was right when he said it was talking about the violence on Saturday nights. The violence outside Mr. Rupert Murdoch's print works at Wapping on Saturday night, the 3rd of May, was appalling. More than 300 people were injured and 81 arrested. Following our last transmission, did AliExpress accuse us of broadcasting hate messages, when in fact we were telling the truth?
Two rather distorted clandestine broadcasts like that have been heard in the London area so far, the last being on Sunday, May the 18th at 10 hours UTC, around 97 megahertz, very close to and in fact interfering with the commercial radio station LBC. The name is Radio Wapping, the voice of the print workers, Wapping being the place where the printing plant is located.
You're listening to Radio Wapping, the voice of the print workers.
Well, if that isn't enough, listeners in the United States report hearing a station identifying itself as a Palestinian Liberation Organization network on either 14396.5 or 14394.8 kHz lower sideband between 1915 and 2015 UTC, causing interference to a Voice of America transmitter feeding one of its overseas relay stations. Well, John, getting back to London, is the existence of all these illegal stations having any effect?
I think that the existence of the pirates is pushing the official people into admitting what they must have known in private for a long time. That is, that the existing setup needs to change. If you're curious to learn more about the background to all of this, there's one book written from the pirate point of view that makes very informative reading. It's called Rebel Radio, and the authors are John Hind, spelt H-I-N-D, and Stephen Mosco, that's M-O-S-C-O. There's a paperback version published by Pluto Press in London, and I've seen it quite often in British bookshops, and I know it's sold in other countries. The bookshops where I have seen it are straight ones, and not just fringe bookshops, which must mean that its message about pirate radio is now being taken relatively seriously in Britain. I promised a while ago to include items on this monthly spot for people who are just getting to know about pirate or clandestine broadcasting for the first time, so I'll say something on that level now. There are regular clandestine shortwave broadcasters, though the habits of any one of them may change without notice, so it pays to keep up with regular sources of news about what they're doing. For this, there are good monthly features or columns in two shortwave club magazines. Firstly, there's Shortwave News, published by the Danish Shortwave Clubs International, and you can find out how and where to contact the club by looking for the DSWCI advertisement in any recent issue of the World Radio TV Handbook. And in North America, there's Friendex, spelled F-R-E-N-D-X, which is published by the North American Shortwave Association. The address of this club is 45 Wildflower Road, Levittown, Pennsylvania, 19057, in the USA. I'll repeat it. 45 Wildflower Road, Levittown, spelled L-E-V-I-T-T-O-W-N, Pennsylvania, 19057. Apart from station names and schedules, these magazines also give news from listeners on how to contact the stations, or some of them anyway. In theory, clandestine stations are clandestine and don't appreciate contact, but for that reason, it's sometimes an enjoyable sport to find out how to contact them anyway. If they represent some political point of view, for example, you can start the game by writing to the stations care of whatever public organization or delegation or party represents that point of view. Just recently, that trick has produced replies and confirmations of reception for the voice of the National Army of Democratic Kampuchea, normally on about 5200 kHz, around 1330 and also 2330 UTC, care of the permanent mission of Democratic Kampuchea to the United Nations in New York, and Radio 15 de Septiembre, Radio 15th of September, which wanders around 5550 to 5570 kilohertz, and which is a conservative station with programs intended for Nicaragua. Care of the Nicaraguan Democratic Force, Fuerza Democrática Nicaragüense, at its office address, presumably its lobby address, in Washington, D.C.
Thanks, John. Well, quite legal has been the appearance this past week of Damascus, Syria, on the new channel of 15020 kilohertz in the 19-meter band, noted here at 14 hours UTC. A good signal recorded by Ehad Khodain of our Frequency Bureau.
Radio Netherlands, news and information from the west coast of Europe.
We're currently going through a lot of new applications received from people who'd like to contribute to the program from India and Kenya. Remember, this communications magazine runs on enthusiasm and a continuous flow of new ideas. If you'd like to do a bit of detective work, we'd like to hear from you.
If you're an active shortwave listener and you have an absolutely irresistible urge to practice the French that you've been learning listening to Radio France International, could I make a suggestion? Why not come to Montreal, Canada this summer? There are all sorts of people here in Montreal that you could try your French out on. And while you're in Montreal, you could attend the 21st Annual Convention of ANARC, the Association of North American Radio Clubs. And just in case you haven't recognized my voice, I'm Ian McFarlane from Radio Canada International. RCI is sponsoring this year's ANARC convention, which is being held on the weekend of July the 18th to 20th in Montreal. And we'll be playing host to several hundred radio monitoring enthusiasts from all over Canada and the United States, and Europe as well. We have a very busy program planned for the 3 days, seminars on shortwave jamming, frequency management, Work 87, and much more. We'll also be recording two of RCI's popular programs at the convention. You'll have a chance to take part in the Shortwave Listener's Digest Forum and the Listener's Corner Mailbag program. And along with a bus tour of Montreal, a boat cruise, and a wine and cheese reception, there's the Saturday evening ANARC banquet. Our guest of honor at the banquet this year is Arthur Cushion from New Zealand. Those are just a few of the many details on the convention, and you can get all the details on this big event along with a registration form from this address. ANARCON 86, and that's spelled A-N-A-R-C-O-N, Radio Canada International, Box 6000, Montreal, Canada, and the postal code is H3C3A8. That's ANARCON 86, Radio Canada International, Box 6000, Montreal, Canada, H3C3A8. So we'll be looking forward to meeting you in Montreal in July.
Well, now over to Victor Gunatilica and Sarat Virakun with media news from the region.
As you come down on the line from Holland, Jonathan, here in Sri Lanka, Sarat and myself are being lashed by a tropical thunderstorm. It's raining very heavily outside with lightning and thunder crashes all over the place. But anyway, we hope the DX news will come through okay over there on the line from Sri Lanka to Hilversum. Well, we'd like to start off with some activity from Afghanistan. The External Service of Radio Afghanistan has been changing frequencies and a lot of activity on the shortwave frequencies. Sarat has been tuned to Radio Afghanistan's English service to South and Southeast Asia, and he will provide you with up-to-date frequency information.
Radio Afghanistan's External Service English to South, Southeast Asia and to the Far East is now heard on 17655, 15255, 9590 and 6085. It is from 09 hours to 10:30 and only 6085 is direct from Kabul. The others, 17655, 15255 and 9590, are relayed from transmitter sites in the USSR.
In the morning, the USSR relay has also come up with a new frequency, 15360 kHz, that's 15360, signing on at 0125 UTC. Well, this is just 20 kilohertz below the BBC's Far Eastern relay station from Singapore on 15380. In Nepal, the recent elections seem to have brought out a third transmitter for Radio Nepal. This transmitter, by the way, is tested now and then, but now we have all three transmitters running. That's 3230 kilohertz, 5005 kilohertz, and 7165 kilohertz for the home service, signing on at midnight 15. For the first time in recent years, mainland China has introduced daylight saving time. This has resulted in some frequency changes, obviously with summer changes also coming for the CPBS programming.
As usual, Xinjiang People's Broadcasting Station has made some frequency changes. The Uyghur service from Xinjiang is now heard on 7050, replacing 3990, and the Chinese service has moved to 7385, replacing 4800.
But Sarat, you must be able to distinguish between a Chinese regional station, like you've just mentioned, and of course the external service in Chinese of Radio Beijing.
Yes, Xinjiang is an autonomous province from China, and a very large group of Muslims are living in this area. So you could hear a lot of Middle Eastern influenced music from the Uyghur service.
And talking of Muslim influence and type of programming, we are with the month of Ramadan, as we call it here in Sri Lanka or Southern Asia, or Ramadan as in Indonesia. Some years back, we used to hear a lot of activity from amateur stations from Indonesia. These were private individuals making a small transmitter and putting non-stop music during the month of Ramadan. However, all these stations have disappeared, and this is further confirmed from Indonesia itself by a radio amateur in Banda Aceh, Yankee Bravo 5 Golf Radio. And in Banda Aceh itself, we come up with another frequency change.
RRI Banda Aceh is now using 3905. It has replaced the former frequency 4955. RRI Banda Aceh is now heard on 3905 and as well as on 2433, which is also used by another northern Sumatran station, RRI Palembang.
Still with Ramadan, the voice of the United Arab Emirates from Abu Dhabi has been noted with a colossal signal on 60 meters and the frequency 4900 kilohertz, that's 4900 kilohertz, around 16 hours UTC, completely overriding Sri Lanka's Channel 1 Sinhala service. Programs are of course in Arabic, and it is heard parallel to the medium wave channels of 729 and 1539 kilohertz, that's 729 and 1538 kilohertz medium wave. And finally, we want to catch up with an item mentioned in our last program. Radio Deutsche Welle, from its Trincomalee relay station, has been adhering to a new schedule completely different from all those published before. Project engineer Werner Geismann informs Uma Kanden in Bariklow, Sri Lanka, that the current schedule of Radio Deutsche Welle from Trincomalee is 1100 to 1150 UTC Japanese on two frequencies, 11740 and 9640 kHz, 12 hours to 1320 UTC in Chinese, 9605 and 7265 kHz, 1430 to 1650 UTC Urdu, Hindi and English on 7200, 6170 and medium wave 1548 kilohertz. The English segment is from 1610 to 1650.
So join us in 7 days for more from the world of wireless. Bye now.
Input on our output to Media Network, Box 222, Hilversum, the Netherlands. Or to the computer line, Hilversum 45395.
Some stations talk to the world. Radio Netherlands talks to people.
And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website.
This is Media Network with Jonathan Marks,
where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.
I regret to inform you this recording is now officially over.